Hello and welcome to Cool Sheets,
where we sift through the noise so you don't have to.
You'll hear all about 10 things that we are currently enjoying in our lives.
Each of us has exactly 2 minutes to dive in and tell you about one of the things we've chosen.
It might be a book, an app, a gadget, a place, anything goes.
Don't forget to get all of our show notes on our website, coolsheets.cool.
You can also interact with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Let's dive into our Cool Sheets.
Hey, everybody. I'm Karen Holman.
And I'm Brian Hart.
And we're going to get rolling with another fabulous episode of Cool Sheets. And I get to go first. So I am going to start out with some art. Art and irony and this artist herself. So this is Barbara Kruger's box logo. So this woman's art you have probably seen, and she was back in the 60s. She went to art school, and I think she dropped out, but she moved to California, and she got jobs, and she got pretty well known and started teaching at UC Berkeley. And then she made this quintessential piece of art that most of us have seen, and it is a big red box held by a hand, and on the box it says, "I shop, therefore I am." And so that style she went on to use for, there's another one I've seen a lot around, I think these were created in the 80s. Your body is a battleground, and there's a really cool way a woman's face is made, and lots of others like this. And so what is interesting about this art that she created is that it first became famous in its own right for what she was saying with it and everything she was doing, and people really liked her style. But then what happened was the skateboard company Supreme took that style and then made it their own, essentially. So it looks exactly the same. It looks like as if she had made it. And so people went to her and said, "How do you feel about this? They stole your stuff." And she's like, "Well, I don't have a copyright on a logo, you know." So she essentially said, "Yeah, they can do it." And then the irony happened when another brand, another company, did the same thing, and they took this red background with the white font. And then Supreme sued them. And the best part of this whole article I'm going to post is listen to what she has to say about what these two companies are doing with each other. And it's just, it's the biggest eye roll. It's so awesome. Barbara Kruger is amazing. And the whole story is great. Barbara Kruger and the box logo.
Wow, that's cool. You know, I've seen that logo for sure, but I didn't really get all the meaning behind it. I mean, I knew it was a kind of, you know, like quit shopping so much, essentially.
Yeah, and just consumerism, yeah, commentary.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I had no idea of all that story behind it and the woman behind it even. So that's really cool.
Yes.
Super fascinating.
It's great. Yeah, just and this is a really good article that encapsulates the whole thing, because you could, I mean, she could have been a cool sheet just on her own, and the story and just everything. It's pretty awesome.
Oh, man, that's really cool. I can't wait to read that.
Yeah, and I wish I could read some of the quote. I can't because of the expletive. And that our podcast is played over broadcast over the radio waves. Yes. But she's not swearing the whole time. She says some pretty brilliant stuff. So,
oh man. Yes. Yeah. Well, I can't wait to dive in. Cool. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah.
All right. My first cool sheet is an article as well. And this article is called "The Unexpected Joy of Repeat Experiences." This is a New York Times article. It's another one of these articles that wasn't really new information, but I really loved the way they framed it and kind of a new way of looking at it, which is very TED-like. So, of course, I like it. But it talks about how, you know, we're constantly scrolling through Instagram and looking at all these people and experiencing FOMO because everybody posts all the amazing new experiences that they're doing in their life, and they don't really post when they have the same cereal over and over and over, because that's considered boring and that's considered dull. And it's great to try new things and be adventurous. And this article talks about how actually embracing the mundane and doing the same things and enjoying your routine. And I have talked about like morning routines before and things like that. But the way that they frame this, And it actually talks about, because we're so scatterbrained with all these notifications and all of these distractions and multitasking, that a lot of the times when we experience things, the first two or three times are all like the first time, because we're finally like everything sinking in, all the experience of the whole, you know, if you're not in the moment like we should be, but we're just not all the time, we're not experiencing things like we should. So doing it the second time and the third time actually is like the first time every time, which is kind of ironic that it's this loop. But it just, it does, it talks about embracing the things you do every day, the repeat experiences, you know, look at those as something really fantastic in your life, instead of just, and they say, you know, new experiences are great as well, but there is actually, and they go into the science backing it up of doing the same thing over and over and how pleasurable that is for you too. So check out The Unexpected Joy of Repeat Experiences.
I like it. I can say that I experience that because I'm actually not really good with routine. So when I do get into a routine, I really like it. I think, you know, there's like a comfort and just joy, just this innate joy to it. So when you do have it. So, yeah, I can totally see that.
Yeah. And I just it's interesting because I battle with FOMO and I try not to think about it like that. But I certainly like experiencing new things all the time. It's a fun thing. And I always looked at it as a great asset and something you should strive for. But I love how this is like, you know what, embrace the things you do every day as well. Like, don't look at them as just boring and you're dull. It actually says we're a lot more dull than we think, and that's okay.
Right.
Like, it's not a negative. That's a fine thing. So I just really loved
that. I love that because usually you hear, oh, you're way more interesting than you think. I'm like, actually, we as humans are quite dull.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
And that's okay.
And that's okay is the main point. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's just really cool. It really took the same ideas that we've heard plenty of times, but kind of framed it in a really new, fun way.
Yeah, so I like it. I'll definitely read that very soon. Okay, moving on to my next cool sheet. So I'm going to be talking about a short film. So I don't talk about short films very often, I guess, because I actually haven't watched a lot of short films until, well, first off, meeting you, Brian. And then also, my son now is creating a lot of short films and he's applying to various film schools and really getting into that. And so it's given me an opportunity to expand my horizons a little bit. And this one I really liked, and it is, I'm going to try to pronounce it because it is in Gaelic. It is Ishka Baha, and translated to English, it's whiskey, although the word whiskey in Irish, in Gaelic, is water of life. And the meaning of that makes itself crystal clear through this short film. So this is based in Ireland, and it is based back in the early 1900s, around when the Titanic was about to sail. And it is a story. I love short films, how they can encapsulate, if they're done well, these stories within such a short amount of time. And it's this relationship between this older son and his father, and how this son is getting ready to embark on his grand adventure to America. And you can tell that they have tension in their relationship, and the father gives him a warning, and the son goes off and, you know, is grappling in this moment of whether or not to heed his warning. And there's this dichotomy of that he actually went against what his father said, but at the same time, it ended up that he got what his father said. I don't want to give too much away. It's a really lovely short film. If you have 5 minutes to spare, Ishka Baha, Whiskey, Water of Life.
Cool. I've not seen or heard of this one, so obviously I don't know every short film in existence.
What? What?
But that's cool because, yeah, there's so many great short films. And I didn't actually, even when I was getting into film, I wasn't a big short film fan, mm-hmm. even though I know that's how you have to start and I would yeah. help with making short films. But I was always like, you know, I just want to watch a feature.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until the last 5-10 years where I really got into short films. Because, uh-huh. yeah, they're so lovely. You can tell such a complete story in 5 minutes, like a life lesson or something really meaningful.
Yeah.
Certainly more than some of the 2-hour features that are out there.
That is very true.
So, you know, just because it's longer doesn't mean it's good.
I know. And the pressure is on the filmmaker to get across some feeling or some, you know, in such a short amount of time. And if they can do that, it's really great. So, yeah, I recommend this one. And it is based on a true story. So,
oh, cool. Yeah. Very, very cool. Great. All right. Well, my second cool sheet is going to be a musician. And that band, it's a 2-person band. It's called, and they're called Sophie Tucker. And this is not one person, but it's two people. It's a German-American musical duo based in New York, consisting of Sophie Holly Weld, who's a German, and Tucker Halpern, who's an American. And they got together. It's funny, they met at like a party in college, and she had a bunch of songs, and he listened to one. He said, hey, do you mind if I remix this? And the next that night or the next morning, he remixed it and she liked it and they formed a band. And they're like this iconic now pop kind of garage house band. They got really popular for the song Best Friend, which premiered at Apple, the unveiling of the iPhone X. It was like the theme song for that unveiling. So they got really popular for that. They also won a Grammy for Drinky. But I am obsessed with the song Purple Hat, and I'm obsessed with it so much that I'm going to play some of it for you, and I hope you like it too.
Purple hat, cheetah print, dancing on the people, rolled up at the after joint, dancing on the people, people dancing on the people, I got people on the people, people dancing on the people, with the people on the people, smoking CO2, see me, see you, dancing on the people, climb up on the booth, hanging from the people, on the people, my head hits the roof, dancing on the ceiling, on the people, I got people on the people, dancing on the people, I got purple hat, cheetah print, dancing on the people, rolled up at the after joint, dancing on the people.
So that's just a little taste. I think it's about dancing on the people or something. But it's just super fun, super catchy, and I just love Sophie Tucker.
That's great. And also, I love that it's Sophie and Tucker. I just assumed it was Sophie Tucker.
Right.
So, yeah.
And they, you know, I actually found them out, that song. I heard Best Friend, but it didn't correlate to them. Even though I downloaded the song and I listened to it all the time when the iPhone came out, because iPhone or Apple always picks really catchy songs. They did Feist, of course, the 1, 2, 3, 4, and a lot of their songs are really popular. But then I saw on TikTok, I saw this Purple Hat, and I was like, what on earth is this song? Like, it's so ridiculous and so awesome at the same time. Like, dancing on people in the video that, of course, went with it was great. It was like people dancing on top of people kind of when they didn't know it. It's just very TikTok and very hilarious.
Yes, you should include the video.
I will
on the
include
links.
A link to the video.
Yes.
If I can figure out how to do that with TikTok, but I'm sure I will. And then just also, Sophie Tucker on social media is fun to follow. They're on Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, everything. Sophie, of course, is very, very super cute and just super sweet. You can just tell she's a super sweet person. And Tucker is also a good-looking guy. He's got like bleach blonde hair with dark roots and kind of this scruffy beard. And she's, you know, very beautiful with long straight brown hair. But they wear like wild makeup, like space agey alien craziness. Their videos
awesome.
Are really, really fun. Like just totally wacky. Their songs are all really fun and great.
Oh my God, I can't wait to check them out.
It's just a trip. It's super fun. It's very pop and kind of house music, but I just love it. I just love it right now.
Cool. All right, I'm on it. I will, as soon as this is over, I'm going to find that video too.
Yeah.
All right, cool. All right, my next cool sheet, I'm going to be talking about a website. And I have found this website to be super helpful for so many different reasons. It is called the Eco Hub. This is out of Canada, and they have so many different resources. And I'm going to highlight, since at the time of this recording, it is around the end of the year, holiday season. And so they have things that all have to do with, as it sounds like, eco stuff. And so there's an article for if you are grappling with, if you're going to get a tree and what are the pros and cons of the different kinds of trees? And I know lots of people think about this, whether to do that, all about gift giving and DIY stuff and different things you can do. And they have tons of stuff about around the home, how to make things more sustainable, how to save energy on various things. There's a whole section about travel and how to leave a lesser carbon footprint when you do travel, how to travel to indigenous lands and not be a jerk, basically. How to, if you do want to visit, but you know, honor the place you're at. And the list goes on and on. It's hard to actually encapsulate all of it because there's so many different things. You've had a lot of things about home care, like charcoal, teeth brushing, and all stuff like that. They have all that sort of stuff is on there. Articles about textiles and how much waste is with that, and so how you can change your clothes to deal with that, and on and on and on. Just, you could pretty much find anything at this website that might help you just, like I said, lessen your carbon footprint, use less energy, things like that. The Eco Hub.
Wow. Of course, I love this. And again, another one I haven't heard of. So great. More resources, the better for that kind of stuff.
It really is. And I can't say there's so much.
It sounds like every bit of it could be a cool sheet if you want to break it up and
that is true.
Talk about it. Maybe you'll have more cool sheets, like a specific idea or something.
Yes. Well, I have pulled cool sheets from this, I realized I need to just make this a cool sheet because it's an endless number of things.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a lot of that too. Like, secret websites, they're not really secret, but I feel like I just keep pulling from them.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually I'm like, I just need to reveal like how great this actual website is. But I haven't done some of them yet. Some of them I have for sure.
Yeah.
But there's still a few. I'm like, God, how come I haven't talked about this website yet? And I'm like, well, because I'm going to talk about this cool sheet instead. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the specific one. And there's so many really, really great resources out there. So, yeah,
yes.
Very cool. I can't wait to check that out.
Yeah.
All right. My next cool sheet is a video, and it's also a short video. But this is, again, we're taping right after Thanksgiving. And this is the rise and fall of the TV dinner. So this is a video by Cheddar Explains. And I had no idea, but during Thanksgiving time in 1953, there was a huge miscalculation by the meat manufacturer Swanson. So they had over 260 tons of leftover turkey, and they had no idea what to do with it. It was perishable. It wasn't, you know, it was just refrigerated turkey. So they actually put it on 10 refrigerator rail cars and had it go back and forth like halfway through the United States just so that it would have electricity to keep cold while they figured out what the heck to do with all this turkey. They had an open call to all the employees. They're like, what should we do? We're freaking out. We don't want to lose all this money. Of course, it's costing money to go on the train back and forth. And so finally, someone came up, famously Jerry Thomas, but also probably less famously. It probably wasn't just him, but of course, he got all the credit. It was probably multiple people. But he had this idea of taking a combination of ideas from airline food and the military and freezing it and putting it in compartments and calling it TV dinner and then giving it to the family. Now, frozen meals weren't brand new, and that compartment food wasn't brand new because it was on airlines, but freezing it for the consumer, and the key was calling it TV dinner, was what made it blow up. So in 1950, only 9% of people had TVs. So this is very new. In 1954, when they made TV dinners, 56% of the people owned TVs, and then 92% owned them by 1964. So it became like the thing for the American family, for the families in the United States to have these frozen. It saved time for housewives, and because that was very stereotypical, the thing that was back then. And so it was as this really great thing. So definitely check out the rise and fall of the TV dinner.
Wow. Oh, I love that. I have not thought about TV dinners forever. When I was little, that was a special treat.
Yeah.
We got TV dinners.
Oh, yeah.
They were called Libby Land dinners, the ones we got. This is way back. So this is late 70s, mid 70s in Michigan.
Yeah.
And it was a trip because at the same time, it was like gross and awesome at the same time. And we didn't even care about the grossness part because it was so exciting to get the TV dinner.
Yeah, because it, well, yeah, me too. When I was a kid, I remember how great I thought they were because you always got a dessert. You always got you know, three or four. Of course, you know, when the first TV dinners that they came out with, it was turkey, of course, because they were trying to get rid of turkey. And then they just pushed mashed potatoes and then vegetables and then how that expanded. But it also talks about a lot of this. So at first, this was like such an amazing thing. And really, it was also so horrible.
Yeah.
Because then desserts were always added. Then Hungry Man came out. So then had portions. Not to mention that that basically, they're almost responsible for the reason why we don't eat dinner at the table and talk to each other anymore.
Right.
It's all about getting in front of the TV and watching it.
Yeah.
We still do that. Even if it's not TV dinners, we still eat in front of the TV. I think a poll that they had in the video was 92% of people say they just watch TV. And not only does it make you less sociable with your family, but it's been proven to make you eat more and eat faster. Like all the bad things for you when you're eating in front of TV because you're just a ravenous like machine just eating as fast as you don't even realize you're eating food. I know people have experienced where like they're finished with dinner and you're like, I don't even remember eating that.
Yeah.
Like, so obviously you didn't enjoy it. You didn't slow down. You probably overate because you were doing it so quickly. So many things that it's actually horrible. And then it has interesting stats of how it's declined, especially for the younger generations. Like they didn't grow up with it. It wasn't a novelty and it isn't something to be celebrated because they're loaded with sodium and they're just not good for you like fresh food is. But then it's slowly in the last couple years, this video is so fascinating. In the last couple years, it's bubbling up again because frozen food in general, not necessarily TV dinners,
frozen
food because of like, for smoothies, people put frozen berries in and even frozen vegetables in fresh rice or pasta. So it's like a combo of healthy and convenience.
Yeah.
So it's and because it's not perishable is a bonus. So it's a super fascinating video. I was just I actually listened to that this morning and made it a cool sheet immediately.
Wow.
Because, you know, it came out after Thanksgiving. That was just a couple days ago when we were taping this. Yeah. So super fascinating.
Definitely. Wow. Yeah, I think about that eating in front of the TV and it is like the opposite of mindful eating.
Oh.
Completely.
Yeah.
It is like
can't be any more farther away.
Mindless. Yes.
Yeah. Not only you're not socializing with your family if they're around, but you're not thinking about your food or nutrition or the taste even
but
anything about it.
I will say though, I think I have started buying more frozen stuff lately because I feel like maybe it's just a perception and good marketing, but I feel like there's more healthy things. Like I get those Amy's burritos for my kids. So they come home from school and they can like have a burrito. Like it's like a more healthy thing instead of eating chips or something like that.
Sure. So. Yeah, no. And they talk about that. And a lot of it's pretty misleading of how healthy it actually is for you. It is certainly healthier, but not healthy.
Yeah, right.
You know, essentially is what it comes down to. Especially, I mean, there probably are some that are decent, but there are other preservatives and things I'm sure that are in there. Definitely sodium. more than anything, which just isn't great for you because they don't even use good salt. They're using, you know, iodized, probably garbage salt. But yeah, it is convenient. It lasts longer. You know, you can't always cook fresh food all of the time. So it's a, and people that are in lower income brackets can't afford the healthy versions. So, you know, they're still eating the really, really garbage stuff. So it's very fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, moving on to my next cool sheet. I have a YouTube channel. And I love this channel. It is called The Art Assignment. And it is done through PBS Digital Studios. I've actually found quite a few things through them lately. And it is hosted by art curator Sarah Urist Green. And so it's, I love how she does this because in the end, it's almost like an art history lesson. But not, I have taken art history classes and it is not done in that way. She's not marching through history at all. So essentially she takes a concept and then she expands on it in so many different directions. So here's a good example. There's an episode called How Climate Changes Art. So I started watching that and I'm thinking off the bat, oh, this is going to be about climate change. Like, all right, same old. I mean, I just wasn't super excited about it, but I watched it. And it was totally different than I was expecting. So she's starting talking about the Marshall Islands and the people who live there. So that's South Pacific, all these islands. And she's talking about the art that they made that's these three-dimensional reeds that are tied together and then with shells that are incorporated in that was for the islands themselves. So it's essentially this three-dimensional map that they made. And then she's talking about Shinto temples in Japan and how they are remade every, I don't know if it's 100 years or some amount of time, they're remade by the people. And then she's talking about a mosque in Mali and how, anyway, it's, all of these have this through line of climate, but it is not linear and it's, and they're not in the same, not even in the same part of the world. And yet, and by the end, it all comes together. Really fascinating. Another one I watched last night was Eat Like Andy Warhol, and that was awesome. Really wonderful. I love her, too. She's great and just brilliant. The Art Assignment.
Whoa, that sounds really cool.
Yeah.
I can't wait to check that out. I have not heard of that either, so so many good things out there.
I know. It's like, is it too much or is it just enough? All the stuff out there. It's
kind of both.
Wild. Yes, exactly. But fortunately, there's good stuff.
Yes, absolutely. That's what we're here for, to just show you the good stuff so you don't waste time on the other garbage.
We are. We have a tagline, right?
Our whole thing.
Something about we sift through the noise so you don't have to.
Yes, that's it.
Woo!
And case in point right here.
Yes. Yeah. YouTube channels. There are so many.
Yes.
But
not all cat videos, even though cat videos are pretty great.
Is there a YouTube channel about cat videos? I bet there is.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Very meta.
Channel.
Like cat videos about cat videos. Yeah. All right. My next cool sheet is a documentary. And this one, it's interesting because it's hard to even call it a cool sheet because it's about something so controversial and difficult and powerful and disgusting and everything else, every emotion you can possibly imagine. It is called Bikram Yoga Guru or Yogi Guru Predator. So, if you don't know a lot about Bikram yoga, essentially any hot yoga is based off of Bikram's practice. A lot of people don't call it Bikram anymore because he was, he came into Hollywood and Beverly Hills from Calcutta in the 1970s and early 1970s. Of course, he was young and super fit and very handsome, and he took Hollywood by storm. He was super smart. He got a lot of big, big celebrities to take his class and kind of adopt him and take him under his wing and endorse him, and he became legendary. And as he grew older, and he was probably doing it from the beginning, but it's interesting when you're young and handsome and, you know, super fit, he probably slept with a lot of women, and it was consensual. But as he got older and creepier, and still used his power as an influencer, as a teacher, as a yogi, a guru, like very, you know, just all the things that you should not be doing. But he was using that power to take advantage of women, raping them, molesting them, just even verbally abusing them. None of it's okay. This documentary talks about it. He's at, of course, Netflix and probably the people making it are getting sued because he has settled a lot out of court, but he's never been convicted criminally. So he denies it still to this day, but there's dozens of women that have now stepped forward, or at least a dozen. But there's also people where it's changed their lives for the better, and they're like crying about how much they love Bikram, the practice, but they're just devastated and they're so conflicted. It's definitely worth checking out this documentary, Bikram, Yogi Guru Predator.
Oh, yeah. I want to watch that and also ask someone close to me went through all the training and taught it. And before he was, before this was realized, and I would love to have her watch it. And she went down to LA, like she studied with him down there and everything.
Yeah, and I thought that was the case, and I wanted to get a hold of them and talk to them before I talked about this. But then I was like, well, I don't want to muddle that experience with this, just the documentary.
Yes, exactly.
Because really, there's a bunch of stuff, especially lately about Bikram, but I just want to talk about this documentary. It's a good way to get an hour and a half and get a snapshot of the whole history of it, and then you can dig in further if you want. But but what I found the most fascinating were the people where that, you know, it was like the typical, it was a guy that was overweight, and Bikram was not only just abusive to women, but he was very verbally abusive to a lot of his students down there, you know. And he's like, the first thing he said to me is like, I don't like your fat, the way you jiggle, like, get out of my face, you know. He's very abusive, and he's like, but that's what I needed at that moment to get me to get serious about my health. And now he's thin. And, you know, he's like, I owe my life to this man, but he's also a monster. And that dynamic, especially,
right.
I mean, it's so easy to paint somebody as an absolute evil, especially when they do the most unimaginable things like rape, like the worst of the worst. But he has changed so many people's lives for the better. Like it is complicated, even though he's definitely a monster. There's no getting around that.
Right.
But it's just, that was my most fascinating part. And they had people in there that still were not 100% against him, that were willing to talk in the documentary, which was fascinating that I'm really glad that they got people like that.
Yeah.
Because there are people out there that still to this day vehemently like defend him to the core and call all these people trash and liars and just trying to get money out of him, and he is a god, and you know, we should revere him, and super, super scary.
Yeah
It's eye-opening for sure,
right.
Definitely worth checking out.
Yeah It always kind of I've been to Bikram Yoga Studios like whenever 10 years ago or so before all this, and it always kind of sat strangely with me that there was this person, you know. I just felt like if he truly wanted to get out this type of yoga, he would. And I guess you name things after yourself, you know, if you have enough power and that's what you're into or whatever. But I guess I just felt like so much of it was always, it came back to him, and you couldn't have a yoga studio. And there were all these rules around it.
Absolutely.
You had to call it that, and you had to always do the same exact form and the same order and everything. And he had patented that or something.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyway,
though the practice wasn't his, he said that the way he organized the 23, 26 postures or whatever was his, which wasn't, even that's under debate.
It's just strange.
It's very un-yogi, very un-guru to because these classes were $10,000 to go to get certified that you had to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had to get certified mm-hmm. to have the Bikram name. Yeah, so it was. And he kind of embraced that. He was very much a showman. He was like, oh, yeah, I'm yogi meets, you know, oh, I forgot.
Oh, jeez.
something ridiculous. But he loved it. He embraced it. He thought it was great. He had, you know, the fleet of Rolls Royces and Bentleys and all of that and flaunted it around. And he still is. That's the craziest part is he still is. He's not in the United States anymore because he has a warrant for his arrest. But he's still, to this day, doing classes in Mexico and Spain and all over the world, except for the United States, and flaunts it on Instagram and
interesting.
Things like that.
I was wondering where he... I haven't followed him, so I was wondering where he was. So
yeah, it's just... But yeah, it's just... Cults and, you know, these kind of cult leaders always fascinates me because it's essentially what he became, even though he took it on a foundation of something so pure of yogis and yoga and
this healing
so
modality
great. It's just mind-blowing.
Well, I'm moving on to my last cool sheet. And, you know, every so often I like to do a science cool sheet. So I'm going to do one again. And it's kind of fun how it happens because I'll just be in everyday life and something, I'll be like, oh, yeah, that's one. And so what I'm going to talk about today is allotropes. And in fact, I asked a friend the other day, is allotrope a normal word? Like, does that an everyday word? No. Okay, I've confirmed that. All right. So an allotrope is a different form of the same element. So a really great example is carbon. If it's bonded together in a very specific way, then it creates a diamond. Whereas carbon, the same element, bonded together in a different way, it is graphite. There's actually a third allotrope of carbon that is called a buckyball. That is a really cool. I'll talk about that in a minute. But what is incredible about the way, just by changing a few things about the bonds of the carbon atoms together, is that diamond, it is the hardest substance. And the only way you can cut diamond is by using other diamonds, essentially. And it is completely non-conductive. So it is an insulator in every sense. It is an electrical insulator. It's a heat insulator. Whereas graphite bonds together in essentially it looks like a beehive. So you have these hexagons and it creates sheets of it. And so these sheets of graphite are actually electrically conductive and just completely different properties, even though it's the same exact element. And another example of two allotropes is tin. Tin creates two allotropes. White, that's just the normal kind of metal-looking thing. And the other one is this powdery substance. It's still just tin, but it's powdery. And that was actually, there's a lot of theories saying that when Napoleon marched into Russia, that it was really cold that winter and the temperature dropped so low that the tin buttons on Napoleon's army's jackets, they turned from one allotrope to another at that temperature. And so these metal buttons essentially just turned to powder, disappeared, and half of them, or more than half, froze to death. So very, very interesting allotropes.
Whoa. I love when you share science cool sheets.
It's fun.
Oh, man. That's just stuff that, I never would have known about. That's so cool. Dang.
There will be more.
Good.
I promise.
I can't wait. And it just makes me want to learn more about it, too, which is perfect.
Oh, and there's so much. Yeah. There's always more to be said.
But yeah.
I only
absolutely.
Have 2 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. That's what's so great, though, because now I want to go learn more about it.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Awesome. Thank you for sharing this.
Sure.
All right, my last cool sheet is going to be a little more of an upper since that last one was a little grim. And this is a podcast, and you're going to love this podcast. I just know it. It is called Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls. And this is a podcast. They call it a fairy tale podcast about the extraordinary women who inspire us. The show is based on the book Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls, which is a global bestseller. It has inspired millions of girls and women around the world to dream bigger, aim higher, and fight harder. So I love it. They also, when you look at the book, they talk about it's for rebel girls ages 4 to 101 years old. So I just love that because it's packaged as a fairy tale bedtime story book, but it's really for, and not just women, I will say, because I'm really enjoying this. It's for anybody of all ages. And how the podcast works is they break down chapters or story, these shorts, because they're very short chapters, features one woman. And it's read by somebody, so either Melissa Gates or Diana Naid. So powerhouses in their own right are talking about other amazing women from the past. So Yasura Mardini is read by Diana Naid. Yasuri was a swimmer and was one of the first refugee teams to ever compete in the Olympics. Virginia Hall is read by Mitra Kalada, who is the World War II spy with a wooden leg. Super fascinating story. Billie Jean King, of course, who changed tennis forever. When she had a tennis match versus a man, it was called The Battle of the Sexes. There was actually just a movie about it, but she really changed the game of tennis, especially for women. It's still to this day one of the only sports that has equal pay in the majors only, though. So there is a little asterisk there. But in the major events, women and men are paid equally, which is amazing in sports especially. Definitely check out Good Night Stories for Rebel Girls.
Awesome. So before you were even done, I have subscribed to that podcast.
Yes.
And I will also say, when you just said that tennis is the only sport where there's equal pay, I just got the chills. Like, that's awesome. That is, it's just not the case.
No,
anywhere
not
else.
Even close.
And it just makes me sick. And that's so great that it's true for that sport.
And definitely with a caveat that that's only in the majors.
Okay.
So when you get to Wimbledon and things like that. In any other lower forms, even in tournaments that are just not the majors, because there's only a few majors per year, it's grossly favored towards men. Way, they get paid way more. The prize money, everything. And who knows about sponsorship, of course.
Yeah,
you know, that's
right.
Probably.
Exactly.
But at least there's one thing.
Yeah, I know.
Where it's equal. And it's all because of this guy who is known and proud to be a chauvinist pig and challenged. First, he challenged one retired female tennis player and then challenged Billie Jean King, who was like the reigning champion, destroying everybody in her field. Challenged her. He was super cocky. It was like it was in the Astros Stadium. There was bands, and she came out in a throne with being fanned by shirtless men, and he came out in a rickshaw with cheerleaders around him in short skirts, and he was, you know, so it was very hyped up. He played the first set with his coat on because he didn't feel like he even needed to take his jacket off. And he got his butt handed to him 3-0.
I love it.
I took off his coat the second set, and it did not matter. She smoked him.
Love it. Love it.
She's definitely a cool sheet.
Yeah.
All these women are probably cool sheets.
Right.
Not probably. They are.
Yeah.
The people that are reading them are cool sheets. It's just, it's so great. I'm enjoying it so much. It's super cool.
Oh, great. Well, what a great way to end this episode.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Cool Sheets. You can find out more about all the cool sheets we listed by going to our website, coolsheets.cool, and looking for the links.
That's coolsheets.cool. And you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Leave comments for us on Facebook or email us at info@coolsheets.cool. Bye.